Everybody, and welcome to the Saturday Morning Anime Podcast, where we leave the analysis to the professionals. I'm Trey, your Duelist Kingdom runner-up.
And I'm Xavier, the Shadow Realm.
Before we start today's episode, I want to remind everyone that this show is not intended for kids, even if our favorite shows are totally intended for kids.
So this episode, we're going to talk about something pretty famous, another series examination. I forget what we call these, honestly. We're going to be talking about Yu-Gi-Oh! And we're going to be talking about the one everyone knows and very little information on the one that everyone doesn't. But eventually we'll get to that.
Yeah, so today's episode, talking about the cult classic hidden gem, original Yu-Gi-Oh!
I'll have you know it's remake Yu-Gi-Oh! Original Yu-Gi-Oh! Aired in 1998, and no one talks about it.
That's true. Don't worry about it. But Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a big series. Even the original has a bunch of main arcs. So we're splitting this one up into two episodes to cover the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Series. Then we'll probably do some other episodes, and then across the next probably 2 months or so, we'll cover all of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Series. But today we'll be covering Duelist Kingdom, Battle City, Part 1, the Virtual World arc, and Battle City, Part 2. Of the original Yu-Gi-Oh! So before we get into that, Xavier, as is normal, what are your general thoughts on original Yu-Gi-Oh! Before we spoil the shit out of these four arcs?
Okay. First, can I give some weird background about Yu-Gi-Oh! For anyone in our audience who only reads manga, doesn't watch anime, there are a few that I know of off the top of my head. So Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a manga that went from like 1996 to 2004, 2005, I want to say, somewhere in there. It is not at all like the series. It's basically a series of diverse gambling games. And they made a 1998 anime about that, which is really dark and scary. But then they stole one game from that, which is to say Duel Monsters, which is a trading card game. And they made a whole anime about it, and they're still making anime about it. Which is to say, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is like... It's a giant toy commercial, but not in the same way that Transformers is. Though both of them are things that I love dearly. I quite enjoy toy commercials. The Yu-Gi-Oh! Series, the second one, is just sort of a fun, silly time where it's trying to reconcile the fact that the subject matter of Yu-Gi-Oh! Is actually super dark, and at times the series is super dark, with this is a children's card game. And it's hilarious to watch, just a really good time. At times, disturbingly well-written. Similar to Transformers, like you wouldn't think your toy commercial is well written. Also, not particularly good at actually teaching you to play Yu-Gi-Oh! Whatsoever. because the rules don't match up. They never have. Even like before all the rule changes to happen in competitive Yu-Gi-Oh! Because they were sort of just going by the seats of their pants, because in the manga, it's not well defined, like what the card game is. They just sort of play it. So that's always fun to like get into actual paper Yu-Gi-Oh! And realize nothing is the same.
Wait, no, there is one thing that's the same. If you lose in paper Yu-Gi-Oh!, you also go to the Shadow Realm.
Yeah, if you lose in paper Yu-Gi-Oh!, you go to the Shadow Realm, which is to say you lose all of your monthly income to buying a tier one deck.
And then your friends have to go battle to win you cards to bail you out of your fucking debt that you're in now for playing competitive Yu-Gi-Oh! But yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh! Very different from the manga, having read like a couple of volumes of it. I grew up on the show. As we've talked about before, the cool anime at like my elementary school that all the kids thought was the dopest was Yu-Gi-Oh! We would bring our cards to school and we'd play the fun games. We'd like... go out of the fucking schoolyard as like third graders and pretend to be Yu-Gi-Oh characters because it was cool and we really liked it. And to this day, inside jokes that were made like when I was playing Yu-Gi-Oh as a kid, I still have these with these friends that the handful of them I still know. So Yu-Gi-Oh is something that's always been kind of part of my life. And I've really been looking forward to this episode because I don't know if this is a hot take. I actually think originally Yu-Gi-Oh is pretty fucking good. It's a great time.
It's definitely like the second best Yu-Gi-Oh series to exist, in my opinion. Out of like the seven of them.
Yeah, we're at six or seven. Are you a 5Ds fan for number one?
Yeah, no, 5Ds is my number one.
Okay.
OG Yu-Gi-Oh is high up there.
I've watched all of OG, all of GX, and like the first season of 5Ds. And you know what? I think that's pretty fair. I enjoy them all dearly. We'll get to all of them eventually. But I think now is like the time where you just talk about your favorite things, about what happens in Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, who are these characters? What's your favorite? What arc do you like best? What's going on?
Yeah, so probably the thing that I like the most about Yu-Gi-Oh! Is it's fully committed to the bit, like in a way that most shows aren't. And this is specifically, let me be clear, pertaining to the 4Kids dub of original Yu-Gi-Oh! They knew what they had on their hands, like when they got the script, and they played it up to the nines. And it's almost like watching a traditional comedic play, right? That's right, I'm comparing Yu-Gi-Oh! To Shakespeare.
This is what your degree is for. This is literally what it was built to do.
In that the comedy from Yu-Gi-Oh! Comes from the fact that they're taking everything deadly serious, right? So, while yes, they are playing a trading card game, and in popular culture, the trading card games are for children, or people think they're for children, right? Even though we all know plenty of adults play trading card games, whether it's like Magic the Gathering, Duel Masters, Duel Monsters, the Dragon Ball Z one, whatever.
Believe right? it or not, Xavier and I, both adults, and oh god, do we have some money in Magic the Gathering cards? Holy shit.
I have some money in a lot of different card games.
I have some classic Yu-Gi-Oh cards that are worth some money, but I don't play competitive Yu-Gi-Oh.
Which is to say, so again, this isn't our spoiler section. So without spoiling anything, there's a character named Bandit Keith, who is seemingly the only like canon American character because Yu-Gi-Oh cares about nationalities at times. Rex might be American.
I thought Joey was.
No, Joey's from Japan.
He's just a Japanese kid with that funny wacky accent in the English dub.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's a Japanese person with a Brooklyn accent.
Yeah.
Bandit Keith is American. Janoichi.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. We've talked about this before. Rex might be. I think Rex is from Europe or America. Everyone else I think is Japanese though.
All of this to say, Bandit Keith is a dual bandit who wears a biker leather jacket and an American flag headband. And similar to a JoJo's character, no one questions this about him. In fact, people are very scared of him because he's been known to like beat people up for their rare Yu-Gi-Oh cards and steal and cheat. And he's considered like a pretty scary guy at the beginning of these series, and everyone takes him as a legitimate threat when you as an audience member can only sort of laugh at this guy whose deck revolves strictly around coin flips and gambling with his American flag headband. And Yu-Gi-Oh! Does a lot of stuff like that where it'll like inflate the stakes. Like the first thing that happens in Yu-Gi-Oh! Which I don't consider a spoiler, is a kid named Kaiba like beats up our main character's granddad for a rare card just so he can rip it. So he can be the only owner of like three copies of the rare card because you can only play three copies. Hey. That's also the only time you see someone play a three of, like in Yu-Gi-Oh! For the most part.
He doesn't beat them up. He hires people to beat them up. Seto Kaiba's rich as fuck, okay? He hires two I watched this episode like a couple days ago. He hires two goons and he just gets his ass beat off screen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Gozaburo and the other boys.
yeah, so you're really here for like it hamming up the stakes and really taking itself seriously when it fucking shouldn't.
Yeah, because like, but I feel like when you're making a toy commercial anime or manga, like with Transformers, part of the shine of Transformers is, yes, it's trying to get you to buy like a glorified Matchbox truck that turns into a robot. But it's also, strangely enough, a very intense war drama about the dangers of like non-renewable energy sources and what will happen if you went to war for renewable energy sources, because most people don't know this because they didn't watch it. But G1, Energon is just oil put into storage cubes.
The back to our regularly scheduled programming of not being a deep lore Transformers podcast. We'll get to that. We'll do some shitty Transformers episode. Don't you wait.
It was a comparison, Trey. to bring it back into the card game world, like Duel Masters, I think doesn't do it as well. Because Duel Masters like takes the fantasy elements and focuses on that, and nothing's ever quite life or death, and it very much functions like a typical like shonen fantasy adventure. Whereas like Yu-Gi-Oh always feels like they could fuck your shit up.
Oh, 100%. Yu-Gi-Oh's intense as fuck. Like, it from the start. You guys have probably seen the memes, you know? In the first episode, Seto Kaiba gets literally laser beamed so hard that it changes who he is as a person.
Gives him, like, really intense PTSD.
It's crazy. They take business dealings very seriously. In a thing that I will explain, like, we'll get to how the Kaiba company is run later, and that shit's hilarious. But all of the villains are taken really seriously. Merrick is intense as fuck. The other bandit duelist, which we'll get to when we get to the time travel part, just you wait, taken very seriously. Pegasus, even though he uses a literal deck of, like, Toontown cartoon character, weird, spooky, funny monsters, and addresses everyone like, Yugi boy, like, intense as fuck, and I was legitimately scared by his presence on screen.
That's another thing about Yu-Gi-Oh! That's really interesting, though I don't know if it's one of my favorite parts or just a weird observation. None of the villains, like, not even really Kaiba in the beginning, like, have a motivation like, I want to be the best at a card game. Even our main character isn't like, I want to be the best at this card game. There's always something going on, like a secondary stake, and the card game is just sort of the mode to which you get there.
Yeah, like some people do want to be good at the card game, right? But even side characters, like Joey, a main character, doesn't want to be the best, at least initially. He wants to get stronger, but initially he's trying to raise money for his sister.
Yeah, Serenity's eye surgery.
Yeah, exactly. And Pegasus is just kind of an asshole.
And he wants to bring back his dead love of his life.
Yeah, and Merrick is like
Egypt
who is trying to like get the god cards and do a bunch of crazy whack shit with it, right? And even Bakura is like, I don't want to be the best. It's very long, and I'm being possessed by an item. Shit's whack, you know. No one is like, I'm the bestest card gamer. Even like Mai doesn't want to be the bestest card gamer.
So that's something interesting about Yu-Gi-Oh! No one has that, like, I want to be the Hokage phase. They all just want real things like money, power, resurrection, immortality, that kind of thing.
Friendship? That's an important one. Some people want friendship.
I think Taya is the only one that wants friendship.
Maybe. What does Tristan want? Tristan kind of wants friendship.
Tristan just wants to be with the boys.
Exactly. He just wants to vibe out and be friends. But yeah. My favorite aspects of Yu-Gi-Oh! One include like the hamming up of the stakes and taking itself really seriously, which I've always loved. Two, I really like the scale of everything. I like that within season two, shit is happening with gods. I like how cheesy the second half of it gets with all of its fucking Egyptian pharaoh shenanigans and its deep lore that we're going to address in a couple of minutes. I have a real fondness for like most of the main cast. I think they're really charming and compelling and really great. And for me, it's always been like, damn, this feels like a real group of friends playing some card games for a bunch of crazy shit. And I like that it doesn't stick super hard to the rules of the game, right? Because you recently showed me what card anime did you show me recently?
like the first two or three episodes of Cardfight Vanguard.
And Cardfight Vanguard's anime was very rules heavy, and I liked it for a completely different reason. Because in Cardfight Vanguard, it was like, wow, there's some strategy happening. And in Yu-Gi-Oh, it's like, damn, there's some emotion going on. I'm being told some engaging shit, which is what I've always liked about it. Because I never looked to Yu-Gi-Oh for like that crazy good strategy stuff. And I love how wacky they get with the side characters. There's Bandit Keith, right? My Valentine literally perfumes her cards to trick people into thinking she can like see the future, which is hilarious.
That's one that gets used a lot. The I can see the future.
Yeah, I can tell what cards are in your hand. The guy from Duelist Kingdom, who I'm forgetting, who literally like is gonna drop them in the fucking ocean, and he has like sharks and shit.
You're talking about Mako.
Mako, yeah. And then like Rex and like Weevil, who are just the bug guy and the dinosaur guy. Even they're super charming and super like great to watch. Abe in like way near the end of the series, he just has monkeys. Like, I don't know. He just has monkeys. I like how they commit the side characters super hard to the kind of decks they have. And it just makes a bunch of like really memorable characters and moments. And I really love its editing, because while there's never anything in Yu-Gi-Oh! Where it's like, damn, that was animated super good, there's all these moments that are really sold on their intensity in the Japanese and English voice acting and in the way they're edited, which is something
also that brief I shout out.
Yeah.
Brief shout out to the soundtrack. Really good soundtrack.
The soundtrack goes, the English dub and the original Japanese voice actors are all phenomenal. The scene in the Orichalcos arc, monster card, god tier voice acting on both sides, super intense. That's like a scene happens. The people who know, right? It's just for something that you wouldn't expect it to be, because it's an advertisement for fucking playing cards. It's just really polished and feels like some people's heart and souls are really put into this project, which I've always really appreciated.
I think one thing I also want to touch on is also Yu-Gi-Oh! Borrows heavily from a lot of other things in order to make itself into what it is, both in the manga and in the anime. So, like, for instance, the creator describes what happens to Yugi as he turns into his alternate personality, which is an ancient pharaoh spirit. Which lives in a thing called the Millennium Puzzle that he's made. That's a necklace, kind of. That entire like transformation into a different personality was modeled off of the concept of Henshin, which is to say the Japanese word for transform that you often see in magical girl shows and things like Kamen Rider. And yes, I will keep mentioning Kamen Rider.
As you should. Oh, that, no, okay, look,
yeah.
We'll get to Tokusatsu stuff eventually. The other night, Xavier was like, you trying to sit down and watch every single Power Rangers opening theme song ever in a row? And I said, yeah, I guess.
Same energy as the Yu-Gi-Oh! OP. Same
I agree. Energy. We have a deep love for Tokusatsu and references to it here, obviously. If that hadn't come across already, I don't know what their show's even doing. But yeah, I feel like we've kind of covered it. It's a fun kids card game show. It's got so much heart. It's surprisingly intense, surprisingly polished. It's to me just a genuine throw on in the background, have a damn fun time kind of show. Like the one of the quintessentials. And it's near and dear to my heart. That's what I got to say before we go spoil this shit.
Near and dear to my heart. I would say genre defining for trading card games, anime, and manga. And also, I think that what gets overlooked about it is it's a masterclass in strange adaptation, where it literally took a very minor element of the manga and a recurring antagonist, but like not really, in Seto Kaiba, and fleshed itself into its own separate long-running thing that now is completely independent from any kind of manga source material.
Hell yeah. And on that note, it's time for the Anime News Corner before we go to spoilers. It's a Demon Slayer heavy Anime News Corner today, because in my computer, in really excellent news, Demon Slayer has hit 100 million in international sales. And I love Demon Slayer, so that's really great. It's only the eighth manga to ever do that in the history of Shonen Jump. The others being Kochikame, Dragon Ball, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Slam Dunk, One Piece, Naruto, and Bleach, which are, in my experience, all other excellent series. But yeah, real proud of Demon Slayer, because I see a lot of people on Twitter kind of shit talk it, and that makes me really sad, because I think it's a genuine good time, and I'm glad this manga's been so successful.
Yeah, really just congratulations to Koyoharu Gotoge, who's the mangaka for Demon Slayer. It's a series that I have finished, and I'm really excited to see the ending animated eventually. And despite all of the shit it gets on anime Twitter for whatever reason, it really is, like, if you're into shonen anime and young boys doing cool shonen things, I think one of the best ever, like, as far as, like, truly delivering on the shonen formula. It doesn't reinvent the wheel, it's not trying to, but damn, does it do the wheel good.
Every time we talk about Demon Slayer, we just get so hype. But yeah, it really deserves it. I think it's a great time. Even one of my sweet mates who isn't into anime is being introduced to anime with Demon Slayer, and his exact words were, "I don't know, haven't really got much, but damn, that was really cool." And then he compared me when I'm really sad to Zenitsu, and that joke continues on.
But, yeah, that's just a classic. The first time Trey watched Demon Slayer and Zenitsu came on screen, I pointed and I said, "That's you."
Which is to say, competent, but only when he's asleep. There's one other piece of anime news, but I will let Xavier introduce this one.
Oh, so in October, they are actually doing a Demon Slayer spinoff, which will be a two-chapter sort of prequel regarding the Fire Pillar Rengoku's first mission ever as a part of the Demon Slayer Corps, I think. I couldn't tell if it was from, like, the announcement, whether it was his first mission as part of the Demon Slayer Corps or his first mission as a pillar. So that remains to be seen. But considering that he's one of the fan favorite characters and does really good in popularity polls and also is just a well-written character, I think this should be real interesting and real good.
Yeah, they also turned on the big Gundam and it moved a little bit, and God of High School continues to be God of High School. Before we get back to the show, I want to thank everybody for listening. This is a very silly hobby project we have, but we put our heart and souls into it. I make Xavier edit it so good and so great, and he's doing such a good job.
Hey, he doesn't make me do anything. All of this was my idea. I just want that to be on record.
It was. I'm happy I was brought along for the ride. But yeah, anyone who wants to can follow me at SatAnimePod on Twitter for the official podcast Twitter. You can find Xavier's through there, but I'm not giving you the at. And I hope you enjoy the episode. Keep on listening if you want. And because we don't do any advertising or anything, if you have a friend that you think might be really interested in our show, feel free to send them an episode or two.
There is one thing that I wanted to say in regards to the spinoff. If you're one of the people who has been looking forward to the Infinite Train movie, this character Rengoku is the focus of that.
Yeah, you've told me about that.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting, because the Train movie looks really great, and I have faith in Ufotable. But on that note, I think we're back to Yu-Gi-Oh! Thank you, guys. Let's get back to it. What giant Yu-Gi-Oh! Spoiler for the first four arcs do you want to say to kick it off? Now that everyone's gone.
Okay, so here's the thing. Here's the thing, right? I feel like we gotta go arc by arc.
Okay.
And the thing in Duelist Kingdom that I want to spoil is they go through this whole thing, like big deal, about Grandpa's best friend being dead, and the Blue Eyes White Dragon is all he has to remember him by, and then Kaiba rips it, and it's supposed to be this whole emotional deal, and then Pegasus puts Grandpa's soul in a card, so you think Grandpa's dead. All of this happens, right? You feel so bad. Never once does Kaiba apologize. Like, they accept him into the friend group. They say, oh, it's okay, Kaiba. They decide that Pegasus is a good person. Like, this is my problem with Naruto, too. There are basically no consequences for all the bullshit that these people pull, only to find out that Grandpa's best friend, Arthur, still alive.
Absolutely. It's fantastic. It's called good storytelling, Xavier. My big spoiler, and then we'll get into like thoughts on this arc in general, is that Yugi wins most of his duels in this story, but one of the only ones he loses is because Seto Kaiba literally stands on the edge of a building and says, if I lose this duel, I'm fucking jumping.
And Yugi's good person.
And Yugi's like, I can't let that guy die. Like, I know he's still not in the friend group yet, but what if he ends up being in it and loses the duel? Because Kaiba's like, I'll literally jump. As he loses life points, he takes steps backwards, and it basically implies that when he hits zero, he's just gonna jump off and die. It's pretty crazy. In front of his little brother. It's crazy. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is hilarious. On that note, what's Duelist Kingdom, Xavier?
Alright. So we open our series spotlight on a rather small kid who's in high school named Yugi Moto, whose grandpa owns a game shop, and he's really good at the card game that the world is obsessed with, Duel Monsters, right? And his granddad has all these rare, chocolatey, mega awesome, special super cards. And one of them is the Blue Eyes White Dragon, which is the most powerful card, I want to say, in the original print run of Yu-Gi-Oh.
That is the most powerful card. As far as attack points. Yes, it is.
Up until Blackluster Soldier was released. So
but you have to use a special summon with like the Blackluster summon and all that shit to get that. So like,
yeah. So there's this kid named Seto Kaiba. How does one explain Seto Kaiba?
He's a CEO.
He is a 16-year-old who was orphaned as a child and was adopted by a weapons company. Mogul, like general business mogul, like Rockefeller in his prime type man named Gozaburo Kaiba, and bred into the perfect business child who would later drive Gozaburo to kill himself, or at least that's how it is in the manga. I don't know if they ever go over how Gozaburo dies in the anime.
I don't think they do. I think he just dies in the anime, like off screen.
But in the manga, Kaiba gets so smart and so good at business, he drives Gozaburo to suicide.
This is the part where I want to tell you how this company is run, which is to say, Kaiba owns 49%, and all of the shareholders collectively own 49%, and the other adopted brother, Mokuba, owns 2% and is always the deciding vote, if I'm remembering correctly.
I believe so. I believe that's the structure, basically.
Which is hilarious. I love that to death. That's the stupidest way to run a company.
Yeah, so Kaiba staged a hostile takeover of Kaiba Corp when he was a young boy, which then got hostile takeover. But that's not the point. Kaiba really wants this Blue Eyes White Dragon because it's his favorite card and it's the strongest card. So he hires some thugs to go beat up Grandpa Moto after he won't sell it because of the aforementioned best friend tie. And this starts a comedy of errors in Yugi's life because he has to go duel for his grandfather's honor.
And he, in his first time ever doing a big time duel where they get on these fucking platforms and they see like 3D recreations of the cards they're playing, he just like summons the most powerful thing ever, which is Exodia, and blasts Kaiba literally into PTSD.
No. He blasts Kaiba. Kaiba's like a husk of a man. He's like, how could I lose? Because no one's ever summoned Exodia. Because in an average Yu-Gi-Oh! Dex, Exodia would be a pain in the ass to summon. Because you have to have all five parts of him, like together in your hand, and you only draw one card a turn. But then the Pharaoh does something which he occasionally does, an ability called Mind Break, in which he puts his opponent in a catatonic state and they suffer PTSD until they become a good person. Or now, they never become a good person.
When we say Pharaoh, Yugi Moto has a puzzle around his neck called the Millennium Puzzle. You later learn there are 7 Millennium pieces, and they're all fucking crazy OP. The Millennium Puzzle has the soul of an ancient Egyptian pharaoh who currently is called Yami Yugi, just in there. And whenever Yugi needs to duel, Yami comes out, and like there's a whole deeper voice and a whole fit change, and he's taller now, and he's like functionally the greatest duelist to ever live.
And no one questions it. No one who like isn't aware of the Millennium items being magic thinks that anything weird is going on at all.
It's fantastic. And like Taya draws like a friendship symbol on the hands of the main four in the friend group, which are Taya, Tristan, Joey, and Yugi. And in like the middle of this duel, Yami looks down and is like, "But my friendship with Taya." And it's that crispy, cheesy goodness. And then Seto Kaiba's a better person now, kinda.
And like I know I've mentioned this like fun fact before, though I don't remember exactly when. Friendship, big part of Yu-Gi-Oh! In fact, the entire like naming convention of Yugi and his best friend Joey is around the term Yujo, which means friendship. And there's a card named Yujo Friendship, which just says friendship, friendship. So like big deal. So anyway. After that, everyone's home, everyone's having a good time. They like pop in a movie, and on the movie that they've been sent
from the mail, they got it in the mail.
Yeah, they got it in the mail. It's a video of the creator of Duel Monsters, a very foppish man with long silver hair, named Maximilian Pegasus, with an eye of Osiris for an eye.
That's one of those Millennium items.
Yeah, it's a Millennium Eye. It's a false eye. And he steals Yugi's granddad's soul, puts it in a card, just because, like, he was bored that day, he makes it seem like. Duels Yugi, beats Yugi, basically gives Yugi, like, childhood trauma for the rest of his life, and says, "Hey, here's an invitation. Get on this boat and come to my tournament. It's on my personal island, and I'm calling it Duelist Kingdom. All the best duelists will be there. And don't forget your Millennium Puzzle." Because this is all a clever ruse to get Yugi's Millennium Puzzle.
Because these Millennium items, crazy powerful shit. They have the souls of ancient duelists in them. They let you, like, see people's hands and shit. It's crazy. It's amazing stuff. And Pegasus is like, I gotta get my hands on those other items, right? And, like, 4 other items end up on the island? Maybe 3?
It's the Millennium Puzzle, the Millennium Ring, and the Millennium Eye, I think, are all seen in Duelist Kingdom.
The Ring? Which one is that?
The Ring is Merrick's.
Yeah, and then, like, the Rod is introduced in Battle City with, with Merrick's sister. Like, Shawnee?
I'm wrong. I'm sorry. I always get them confused because of things that happen in later Yu-Gi-Oh! Arcs. The Ring is with Bakura.
Yeah.
The Rod is with Merrick in the, Battle City arc. His sister has the Millennium Necklace.
Yeah,
I get Bakura and Merrick mixed up because of weird backstory things we'll talk about later.
I also get them messed up, and I was really embarrassed about that. I'm glad you get messed up too, because I was refreshing myself on the story, and I was like, childhood Trey could never tell the difference.
No, like, I know the difference, but then you watch the final couple arcs, and it's like, now you made it confusing.
Kind of the whole Bandit King shit, like, it'd be like that. But anyways, lots of crazy duels happen. You meet a bunch of cool side characters. And like Seto Kaiba almost kills himself. You meet his little brother Imokuba. You meet
who has also been kidnapped.
Yes, and is also just like another orphan. Because it's not revealed yet, but Father Kaiba adopted both of these because of like some bullshit with his actual child Noah. It's really weird. We'll get to it. And all the main characters end up like in the semifinals, basically, dueling. And it's literally like 20 episodes straight of just kind of character development and good duels.
Yeah, and also keeping with this sort of silly thing that's actually really serious, when they get to like the end of the semifinals of the tournament, basically, and go through a big emotional moment with Kaiba outside the castle gates, because the whole thing is like trying to get into the castle for the semifinals. The beginning is like a free-for-all. Pegasus gives you two cards. Yeah, you have two cards, right? And these two cards are two different rewards you can get for winning the whole tournament. If you have a card that depicts like a bunch of treasure, he'll give you like as much money as you want. Like it's a bunch of prize money, basically. Yeah. Near infinite amounts of money. But if you pick a card that is completely blank, it's essentially a blank check. Pegasus will grant you any one wish.
Yeah. And this happens, and like Joey Wheeler sneaks his way here on a boat and a bunch of bullshit. They give him some of Yugi's like star points that you put in your magic dueling glove for all this, like to get into the semifinals and stuff. And eventually, like Joey and Yugi end up against each other in the semifinals. Like right before Pegasus, and they both want to win. And that's probably my favorite duel in Duelist Kingdom, if I'm being honest. I really love this one because a lot of this arc has been Joey learning how to duel because he was terrible at it at the start of the series. Like in episode one, he doesn't have any spell cards. He just has monsters and he gets his ass beat. And by the end, he's become like a competent duelist while like struggling with Yugi and his friends throughout this whole island. And watching him and Yugi both look at each other and go, well, we both want to win and we could both beat Pegasus, but let's see who deserves it. And just going,
it's definitely not that they could both beat Pegasus. No, Joey would have lost.
Joey would have lost. Joey would have beat his ass. Absolutely. Joey, top tier. But they're sitting there dueling and Joey is like competent now. And it's really great. And I love it a lot. And I love like two friends who both have good of heart facing off kind of battles. That's just like I'm a sucker for those. So that's my favorite.
Yeah, I think that's the strongest duel. And also a big part of that duel is Yugi doesn't want to lose because his grandfather's soul is on the line. And his grandfather's body is just sort of a husk of a shell that's in the hospital right now. And Joey wants to win all of the prize money so that he can pay for his blind sister to get an eye surgery that will allow her to see again. Because she used to be able to see, but she slowly lost her eyesight because of some weird genetic thing. It's very unclear what happened to Serenity.
Yeah, and then Yugi wins and goes on to duel Pegasus in another highlight duel. I don't know. I think the finale Duelist Kingdom is just kind of excellent.
Yeah, and then we find out that Pegasus uses his Millennium Eye to just straight up fucking cheat at children's card games and literally looks at people's hands. But it's okay because the Pharaoh has what they call the heart of the cards, what normal people call plot armor.
And he can just sort of go, you can't tell what I'm going to play if I don't know what I'm going to play, and just starts only top decking. And it's super badass and really cool, even though it probably doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, no, Yugi's deck is not built well enough for that to work, but it does. Also, this is a good point to point out. Duelist Kingdom, they did not really know what they were doing and were trying to stick with how Duel Monsters was in the manga. So they're all these random rules, which have never existed in the paper game and only exist within Duelist Kingdom. For instance, the most infamous, like, instance of this was field power bonuses. Do you remember field power bonuses, Trey?
I do. They'd be, like, in a certain area on the island and be like, well, my monster's stronger because I have the field bonus.
Yeah, you get, like 500 extra attack points because you're using a bug on grass.
Yes, that is a fun goofy rule that made Weevil really good.
There was also realistic monster interactions that made no sense. For instance, I cast Polymerization, a card which normally combines cards to make some really powerful new card, right?
Yeah.
But when Yugi does it with a card that is technically dead because it's a zombie-type monster and the Blue Eyes Ultimate Dragon, the Blue Eyes Ultimate Dragon starts rotting for no particular reason.
But it's so cool.
It's really cool. But it's like these are all like concepts that exist within the Yu-Gi-Oh! Manga that are never brought up again. This is strictly Duelist Kingdom.
Because after this, in Battle City and Virtual World, things like toned down a little bit in like the wacky rules, and it becomes a lot more about the emotions, and I like that. It's good, but they're still kind of getting their footing on the rules of the battle system at this point, which is fine. I don't think it actually hurts it that much. It makes it kind of interesting, but
yeah, no, it definitely made it really fun. But after that, they get a little bit more serious about like, no, this is a competitive card game.
Yeah. And this is before they start introducing stuff like literal cards that let you summon ancient Egyptian gods and shit. This is just like, dare I say, grounded. eventually Yugi wins. And basically, like, I don't remember how, but ends up getting both of the prizes and is like, look, you can pay for your sister's eye surgery with the money I won. And then I'll get my grandpa back from the fucking Shadow Realm.
Yeah, it's a really happy, like, wrap-up ending for everyone except Pegasus. So Pegasus realizes on becoming a bad person and betraying the memory of, I want to say her name is Eliza, which is like his dead fiance. And he's like, oh no, I've betrayed her memory. And then after realizing that he's betrayed her memory, Bakura, who's another character we met on the island, who's like a childhood friend of Yugi's.
Yeah, they go to school.
And British.
Yes.
Walks up, and Bakura is also possessed by a Millennium Spirit, but his is evil, and it's in a thing called the Millennium Ring, and he fucking, like, snatches Pegasus's eye out of his skull and leaves the island.
Don't ask how or why, but this one doesn't have, like, an ancient person in it. It has, like, a godly reincarnation of what it means to be evil and, like, the secret big bad. Just in there.
It seems, like, really innocuous, but it, like, Pegasus and Bakura are, like, the audience's key in, oh, these Millennium items, when they're all together, do something.
Yeah, which becomes relevant a lot later. But yeah, Yugi starts bonding with Yami Yugi, you get this happy ending, and everyone goes home, and then they start just playing with fucking dice? That's then, right? Like, post-Duelist Kingdom, they just start dungeon dice monstering it for, like, a couple episodes?
Is Dungeon Dice Monsters direct? Yeah, because it's in that weird, like, here, have a bunch of random Domino City arcs, like mini arcs before Battle City. So yeah. Here you meet the granddaughter of Yugi's granddad's best friend, named Rebecca, who later becomes like Yugi's destined love interest. Screw you, Taya Gardner. Who, like, blames Yugi and his granddad for, like, leaving her granddad to fucking die in Egypt, because Yugi's granddad, before being a card shop owner, was a world-famous archaeologist. Wild.
Incredibly accredited. He found the Millennium Puzzle. It's crazy. And we've already told you, that guy, not actually dead.
Also, Indiana Jones level, that should be in a museum. He gets back from one of the most influential digs in ancient Egypt, finds an ancient Egyptian puzzle box that he can't figure out how to put all the pieces together, lets his grandson do it, and his grandson wears it as like a cool necklace.
Which accidentally lets him summon the greatest pharaoh duelist of all time from his like soul bond. It's crazy. And all this is happening. And they meet this other guy whose name I can't fucking remember, who teaches them about a new game called Dungeon Dice Monsters that they play
that
for
would
half
be
an
Duke
hour.
Devlin. Don't
his
you
name,
ever forget Duke
his
Devlin.
His name is Duke Devlin. No. And Dungeon Dice Monsters, we're going to skip over because I'm not explaining the rules of this shitty dice game.
I'm explaining Dungeon Dice Monsters. Fuck you.
Okay. Everyone, welcome to the Dungeon Dice Monsters podcast.
So Dungeon Dice Monsters is a better designed game than Yu-Gi-Oh. I want to put that out.
Wait, but first, let's talk like the actual card game. I think I agree.
But first, let's talk the motivations of the character, Duke Devlin. Right. So Duke Devlin is a like aspiring game designer. You may have friends who are aspiring game designers. He's their personal insert. And he like admired Pegasus for designing Duel Monsters. Thought he was the best guy ever. Right. Turns out Pegasus not the best guy ever, but he hasn't like left the island. Like no one's seen Pegasus since the end of Duelist Kingdom. So Duke has a personal vendetta against Yugi because he doesn't know about all the shit that went on. And Pegasus was supposed to publish his game, Dungeon Dice Monsters, that he put his whole life into. And he never does. I mean, he does eventually get it published, but like directly after that, he doesn't. So he like torments Yugi, right? So Dungeon Dice Monsters is like a dice automated version of Yu-Gi-Oh! Where you use unfolding dice to summon monsters. I'm not going to go into like the minutiae of the rule.
Thank you.
To build a path to the other player across the field that your monsters can walk down to attack the opponent directly three times. That's how you win. You have to get rid of three heart points. And you know, it's just a really fun, weird detour that never comes up again. And when we see Duke Devlin next, like he's playing regular Yu-Gi-Oh! Never brings up Dungeon Dice Monsters again as far as playing it.
I mean, they're good episodes, but then you get to like what might be my favorite part of actual Yu-Gi-Oh!, which is Battle City.
Yeah, Battle City is pretty cool.
So they're all chilling, right? And then someone like comes to Kaiba. I don't know if it's like in a dream or just like some guy or lady just like shows up and is like, look, there's these things you really need to know about. There's a lot of evil shit going on.
It's in real life. It's Merrick's okay, sister.
Yeah. Who, Merrick's sister, Shawnee or Shoddy. I don't remember which one, comes and is like, look, there's some evil shit going on. I can't tell you who I am. Here's a Yu-Gi-Oh card. I need someone to get all three of them. And hands him Obelisk the Tormentor, the blue Egyptian god card.
It's definitely a Shizu. I don't know why you got Shawnee, but...
It's a Shizu?
Yes, watching... a Shizu Ishtar.
I'm stupid. I'm sorry. I swear there's another character named Shawnee or Shoddy. He's the main character. Maybe I'm just stupid.
I think you're thinking about, again, the ancient Yugi arc that makes everything more confusing.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the time travel versions of these characters. Oh, God. My apologies. There's a lot of name shit that's going to happen in episode two of this. But so they host a giant tournament. Except now, anytime you duel, if you win, you like get the strongest card your opponent has.
No, the rarest card. It doesn't have to be the strongest.
My apologies. The rarest card they have, with the end goal of Seto Kaiba trying to collect all three of the Egyptian god cards. Who has Slifer at the start of it?
Slifer is owned by that random mime guy, because you get introduced to these guys called the Rare Hunters.
Yeah,
the Rare Hunters. Which is it's a dual gang that steals people's rarest cards. So they like get really hyped up for this tournament. And they all work for this guy named Merrick, who also wants all three of the Egyptian god cards. Also, the way like he does, like Kaiba announces the tournament to get this started is really weird. In a like Sony-esque PlayStation 5 way, he's like, hey, to enter the tournament, you have to have this thing called a dual disc, but to get one, you have to pre-order today. No, it's like you have to run to the store and like buy the shit like immediately. And we see like a prototype dual disc in Duelist Kingdom, but this one is way cooler because you don't have to throw it like a goddamn frisbee to summon the monster.
And now everyone has one.
And not everyone.
Most people have them. Lots of people have them.
Oh, you're talking about like in Yu-Gi-Oh! Future. Yes, yeah. Everyone gets them. But they were the PS5 of the Yu-Gi-Oh! World when Battle City happened.
Yeah. At Battle City time, some people get them. And they get to be in Battle City. And then like Yugi, Yami Yugi, Joey, etc., the gang, battle Rare Hunters and other people. Eventually, Yugi ends up getting Slifer the Sky Dragon, which is the red Egyptian god card. Isn't Wing Dragon Ra just owned by Merrick at this point? He has one as well.
Yeah, Wing Dragon of Ra has been in Merrick's possession like since the beginning.
Yeah.
Also, him and Bakura start working together.
Yeah, which is really fucky. And then eventually, like, there's just a bunch of good duels. There are chunks of Yu-Gi-Oh! Where it's like, man, these characters sure are growing as people and dueling a lot.
No, Trey, you're missing some important context about Battle City.
Okay.
Battle City, especially Battle City Part 1, is where shit starts to hit the fan as far as duel stakes. So, like, Duelist Kingdom had like an ultimate goal that was pretty like high stakes, right? Like souls were on the line, right? But almost like every now and again in Battle City, like some real shit will pop off. In fact, almost every duel in Battle City, some real shit will pop off. Joey fights a kid whose like family is all orphans and they need to win, but Joey still beats them and they pretend to have psychic powers. It's a whole thing. Mokuba empathizes with them, even though he should disqualify them because they were cheating because they're orphans too. This guy who also wants to actually know that Eliza wasn't Pegasus's love. It was this guy's, the magician man, who wants to bring his love back to life. And Merrick says he'll do it for him as long as he gets Yugi, right? He just wants the Millennium Puzzle. So Yugi gets like strapped to the side of a circus tent and there's a giant soul buzzsaw that gets closer to you every time you lose life points, and when it touches you, it like rips your soul apart.
Yeah, people's like existences start getting put on the line. Like not your bodily form, literally like your soul being starts getting put on the line like every other duel at this point.
Yeah, and my favorite, right? Is a duel that happens on top of a skyscraper.
We'll get to that.
Where it's a tag duel with Yugi and Kaiba versus two rare hunters, right?
Yeah, this is once they've gotten to like the semifinals and they all got on the fucking blimp and shit to go to the skyscraper.
No, this is before the blimp. This is just during normal Battle City this happens.
Okay, wait, hit me with it. Let me remember, because I know they have the Battle
City. They're on top of a skyscraper and they're like, okay, guys, when your life points hit zero, The glass underneath you will break and you will fall into a pit to hell. They call it the Shadow Realm. The Shadow Realm is hell. If you lose this duel, you will fall off a building into hell.
That is true. That's a thing that happens with side characters. They don't beat them, by the way. In case you hadn't figured that one out, Yugi and Kaiba do not get sent to the Shadow Realm then.
Yeah, and, like, Yuki and friends, like, kind of feel bad about it. They kind of try and, like, not, like, put people's souls on the line and shit. But without fail, all of these people get, like, fucking soul murdered.
Yeah, we weren't kidding when we said it gets really intense. And then, like, you get to the quarterfinals and the semifinals on this fucking blimp. And you have, like, all of the main cast and all of the main antagonists and all of these, like, mysterious side characters, like, all 20 of them on this blimp. Just taking turns dueling. Like, My Valentine is there, and every one of these duels that involves Merrick is like some next level shit.
Like, oh, absolutely. Oh, people getting put in the hospital. Like, Jesus fuck.
This man pulls out a set of cards and he goes, "This is called the Destiny Board. It's five letters, and in English it's FINAL. I owned all five of them, by the way." And he's like, "I'm gonna be real, Chief. If FINAL all get put on the field at the same time, not only do you die, I'm literally banishing you to hell forever. In five turns, have fun." Like, it's the craziest shit, and it's all just happening up on this fucking blimp, because Seto Kaiba really needs to get those three cards.
Yeah, and at this point, Yugi has one, Merrick has one, and Kaiba has one.
Yeah, and Joey's also up there, and Maya's up there. And Shizu is a duelist up there, I think, as well as like one or two other characters. Weevil and Rex are here at some point, as they are throughout the series.
Yeah, they're in the main tournament.
And eventually, like, Merrick just starts steamrolling through people, and Kaiba and Yugi just start steamrolling through people, back and forth through like the whole semifinals and shit.
It's pretty funny, but there are some emotional moments that happen in the middle of it. It's a fun time, right? I really enjoy the duels of Battle City.
We get to my favorite duel in Battle City, which, once again, my bias is showing, includes Mr. Joey Wheeler, which is when he has to fight Merrick in the semifinals after Yugi has already qualified for the finals. And literally, they're like, "We have to beat Merrick, or he's going to get all the god cards and go fucking like crazy on people and do all the evil shit he wants to do. And he's going to get the Millennium items and shit, and it's going to be wild." And Joey's like, "Yugi doesn't even have to duel him if I beat his ass. Yugi might never even need to duel this man because I can fight Yugi in the finals."
And he gets so close. He gets so fucking close.
Literally, this character, Joey Wheeler, who has continually been getting better since the start. At this point, he's even better than he was at the end of Duelist City. At this point, he is a vastly, vastly competent duelist. And he's fighting Merrick, who is literally every time doing damage to Joey, he is physically harming Joey. Like, his organs inside are being damaged as he loses life points. And, like, you die at zero life points. And they get to the point where Joey literally wins, or is about to win. All he has to do is say attack. Like, he outplayed Merrick. He outplayed the big bad. And then he's at, like, a couple hundred life points. And before he can say the word attack, his body gives out, and he just fucking blacks out.
And Merrick, which for some reason counts as a technical knockout or some bullshit.
Yeah, Merrick just fucking City wins. Rule. Merrick just fucking wins, and you're like, no, dude. And then in Yu-Gi-Oh fashion, the Yugi Merrick duel is also raw as fuck.
Yeah, so they have a Yugi Merrick duel where Yugi qualifies to go to the finals against Kaiba.
Yeah, and that's how he gets Obelisk.
Also, it should be said at this point, Merrick has double-crossed Bakura.
Yes.
Has, the Millennium Ring and the Millennium Rod. We find out that Merrick's actually been brainwashed, and he comes from a family of, like, tomb guards that guard the Pharaoh's tomb and all of the Millennium items, because when you get them together, some raw shit happens.
Doesn't he also have a big eye?
Huh?
He has the eye at this point because he got it from Bakura, right?
Oh, yeah, no, he has the eye at this point because he stole it from Bakura, yeah. And he's got, like, a big, giant, like, back tattoo that he got when he was, like, 5. Shit like that.
It's really crazy. And Yugi beats Kaiba, and now he's got Obelisk and Slifer. And the Winged Dragon of Ra, crazy good card, is how Merrick has been winning a lot of these duels. And there's a finale duel where Yugi, like, scrapes by. And barely beats, I think he also almost loses to Destiny Board, right? Unless I'm crazy. I don't remember when Destiny Board comes out specifically.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly how Yugi wins against Merrick.
But he barely does, and succeeds in being the guy who collected all three of the Egyptian God cards. And,
but there's something that happens before, like, the final duel of, like, Duelist Kingdom. Or dual Battle City.
Yeah, sure.
That we kind of skipped over. But, like, just for, like, timeline's sake, this happens in the middle of Battle City, right?
Yeah.
They get sort of, like, isekai'd. Like, sort of online isekai'd.
Yeah, in the middle of Battle City, there's a filler arc before they go to the semifinals called the Virtual World arc, where the main cast gets isekai'd into a video game, has to duel, like, a bunch of people who work at Kaiba Corp, and, like...
No, they used to work at Kaiba Corp.
Used to work at
Kaiba
Corp. When
Kaiba took over, he fired all of them.
Oh, yeah! And then...
So they digitized their brains, because they didn't want to find other jobs in the corporate sector. It's very confusing.
And they all duel, and then you find out there's a new big bad, kind of... with blue hair, he's a little kid, and it's the digitized brain of the actual, like, not adopted Kaiba son, Noah Kaiba, right?
Yeah, Noah Kaiba.
Yeah, you can go off about fucking Virtual World if you want.
Okay, so Gozaburo Kaiba, who is later revealed to be the actual big bad of the Virtual World. His son had, like, some rare disease, not childhood cancer, I don't think.
I don't think it was cancer.
So he digitizes his brain, since his body will, like, die, basically. And Noah drags Kaiba and company into the virtual world, along with Kaiba Corp's, like, original executive board that, like, turned on Kaiba, also had their brains digitized. And he's like, all right, so here's what's gonna happen. We're gonna duel with new rules. This was the Deckmaster system, which is another thing that was used in absolutely nothing except, like, Duelist of the Roses, which was a PS2 game. And loser gets their body taken.
Because they want
to get out of the virtual world. And in fact, they do steal a couple bodies for a little bit.
They literally do. Doesn't Tristan's body literally get stolen for a while?
Yeah, and he's stuck in a robot monkey.
Yeah, oh my god. He does get stuck in a fucking robot monkey. Because somebody like gets out in Tristan's body. It's wild.
Yeah, so like that's a thing that happens. So you have our heroes dueling all of these like ex-corporate executives who want to like sneak away on their bodies. Some of which we have never seen duel before. Like Taya has her first canon duel. That's during true. This part.
Taya does duel there for the first time.
So it's just really interesting. It's really fun. You find out Gozaburo Kaiba also is not dead, but actually just a computer program now.
Which, depending on which canon you trust, just isn't right. Because supposedly he killed himself. I don't know.
He may have killed himself and digitized his brain. You don't know.
This is completely fair. I have no idea. I've not read the manga, and this is technically anime filler.
So anyway, there's this really weird but really well-written little saga where Noah actually always wanted a sibling. And he steals Mokuba from Kaiba, and Kaiba has like this weird emotional mental breakdown where he's like remembering the day he got adopted, and him and Mokuba aren't actually related like by blood. Mokuba is just some kid he looked out for at the orphanage and like demanded that Gozaburo take along with him if Gozaburo wanted to adopt him. So like losing Mokuba for the second time, but this time seemingly of Mokuba's free will, like really like just destroyed Kaiba's mental state.
At this point, like we haven't gone into Battle City Finals yet, but like at this point, Kaiba's kind of like a good dude, nearly. He's still an asshole, but he slowly gets there throughout the series. And this is like another one of those moments where you watch Seto Kaiba get mentally broken like multiple times in the series. And eventually come out like a good, compassionate, understanding person on the end. But we weren't joking when we said these main characters go through some shit. It's insane. There's crazy duels over lava. There's this weird trek through a desert. I love all of the side stuff with Mokuba because I really like Mokuba, if I'm being honest. That's one of the best written relationships in the series is like this Noah-Seto Mokuba relationship that goes on in Virtual World. And honestly, Virtual World is one of my favorite filler arcs I've probably seen in like a long form show like this. I prefer it to like I prefer Yu-Gi-Oh filler, I guess, a lot to like Naruto filler.
I don't know if you would call Yu-Gi-Oh filler at all.
That's true.
Because most of Yu-Gi-Oh is not canon to anything but Yu-Gi-Oh.
That's true. Like in barely even half the main arcs of Yu-Gi-Oh are like canon to something else.
It's weird scattered concepts.
Yeah, it's pretty wacky. So like this is one that you see kind of people discuss it as filler, but it's an interesting discussion to have. I love Virtual World as I love every arc of Yu-Gi-Oh. Don't even get me started at the start of this this next Yu-Gi-Oh episode when we talk about the fucking dragon shit. Oh, I'm real psyched.
But I think that one thing the Virtual World shows off really interestingly, that Yu-Gi-Oh does better than a lot of anime, is that there aren't any real like large time skips in Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah,
you have to watch all of the characters develop in real time. So like Mokuba is like a non-factor in Duelist Kingdom because he spends most of it like as a prisoner on Pegasus's island. And then you really see him like grow up and come into his own, and you see like Taya and Tristan become more active group members because they've seen what Yugi and Joey have gone through, and like all this shit, like essentially as it's happening, there's no like 2 years have passed and now we're all really good at dueling, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, you watch the characters develop over the course of like, I want to say it's like less than 2 years. For the whole series. I don't know the time frame.
It might be a little longer than that, but it does seem to happen in rapid succession. The only reason I say it's probably longer than that is that one of the few things you could consider a time skip happens between Battle City and the Waking the Dragons arc, which is what we're going to start part two of this with.
Yeah.
where like Rebecca is much older than she was when we first meet her.
That's true, because in the arc after Waking the Dragons, like that weird tournament arc, she's way older. She's like, not way older, she's noticeably older than she was.
She's like 1 or 2 years older.
Yeah, definitely. In like the weird tournament that happens where we'll get to it.
Well, no, she shows up in Waking the Dragon to be like, hey, it's the Atlanteans. Yes, the Atlanteans show up.
It is the Atlanteans. It was Atlantis the whole time. And human greed is what caused the dueling spirits to disappear. It's a whole lot of shit. We'll get there. But Duelist Battle City ends with our hero, Yugi Moto, having all three of the Egyptian god cards and basically proving himself, at least at the time, to be the most gifted dueler on the planet.
It also ends with another thing that Yu-Gi-Oh! Like as a storytelling device gets like very right, where it just kind of builds on these concepts over and over again. So it's the Pharaoh and the Millennium Puzzle. Then it's, oh, there's 7 Millennium items. Then it's, here's more Millennium item users. Here's the family that's in charge of guarding like a big stone sarcophagus that all of the Millennium items fit into, and here's a prophecy. And now you get to the end of Battle City and they're like, okay, Yugi, now that you have all three Egyptian god cards and you have all of the Millennium items, you need to come with us to this museum where your fucking Millennium puzzle should be anyway, and use all of these to like figure out the truth of ancient Egypt that we've been guarding all this time.
Yeah, there's other details that I feel like are worth mentioning, at least for story reasons, that I think are really interesting. When Yugi is normal Yugi, or when he is just chilling, and Yami Yugi is in like a pocket dimension inside the puzzle, just vibing. It's like an M.C. Escher fucking drawing of like a weird Egyptian pocket dimension.
Don't people get trapped in that?
Yes. People get trapped in the different items at different times, and it's literally like the stairs don't make any sense, M.C. Escher style pocket dimension inside the puzzle, and that's where Yami Yugi lives when not dueling, or spoilers, like when Yugi is in control, because there are times where Yugi disappears, where Yami Yugi becomes like the main character. Mm-hmm. That happens next arc. And there's this also weird pocket dimension.
We forgot that Yami is, he has amnesia. He doesn't know who he is.
He does not know that he doesn't remember himself being a pharaoh. He just knows he's there. And he's like a strong spirit that's good at dueling. Like nobody knows.
Merrick is the first person to even call him pharaoh.
Yeah, and they're really fucking confused when he does it. Until you start getting small details of like Kaiba, who realizes, wait a second, I know where the concept for duel monsters came from. And you see like giant stone tablets that are basically cards. Like there's like a 10-foot tall stone tablet with like a base drawing of the Blue Eyes White Dragon on it. And then it like edit cuts over to like him holding the Blue Eyes White Dragon. And you're like, oh my God, were they dueling with giant stone tablets in ancient Egypt? And the answer is totally yes.
Yeah, so in the Yu-Gi-Oh world, everyone's like side hobby is archaeology, and Pegasus was on like a weird archaeology like tourist trip, I fucking guess. Maybe he's an archaeologist, don't remember that part. Saw these stone tablets and was like, I could make a card game out of this.
And lo and behold, it was exactly playing cards, and the ancient Egyptians did it, but with the giant tablets instead of with pieces of paper.
Which, like, just think of how many slaves that took.
Jesus. Yu-Gi-Oh! We just sort of covered the story there. We can spend a little bit just talking more spoilery about our favorite stuff. Like, who's your favorite Yu-Gi-Oh! Character? What's your favorite duel in this first half of original Yu-Gi-Oh!
In this first half, my favorite duel is the My Valentine duel. And My Valentine is one of my favorite characters because she is a weird side character that gets a lot of development throughout the entire series.
She does.
And like a weird side romance with Joey. And just the fact that like her particular method of cheating is so fucking ridiculous compared to all of the other methods of cheating. So like Pegasus uses magic. Bandit Keith literally takes out cards from his sleeve like a normal person. Esperova in Battle City just has his siblings on a skyscraper looking at people's hands and radioing him the information. My Valentine got probably no less than like 60 different perfumes, somehow made them all distinct enough that the scents wouldn't mix, memorized all of the scents, and scent coded her cards by spraying them each with a different kind of perfume. And Joey Wheeler, who I guess also has the nose of a bloodhound, smells this and is like, hey, you're fucking cheating. Because the wind starts mixing all the scents and then Mai has to play fair.
Great duel. So your favorite duel is the first Mai Joey duel at the In Duelist Kingdom?
Yeah.
That's fair. I'm just now realizing in her development, and these characters have the same last name, a lot of the backstory stuff that I like about Faye Valentine in Cowboy Bebop feels very Mai Valentine-esque. Like, these feel very oddly similar in tone for these characters, and I don't know why, but my brain has told me this thing.
I mean, they're both sort of femme fatale characters, so I mean, there's definitely something in the character archetype there that connects them.
Yeah, I'm now trying to think of my favorite duel, and anything with Weevil I really like, just because I think he's very goofy. I like when people play Maneater Bug because I like the card Maneater Bug. I really like the Duelist Kingdom duel against the two brothers in front of the doors, and one of them can only tell the truth and one of them can only lie while playing duel monsters.
Oh, Para and Dox?
Yeah, Para and Dox.
The Paradox Twins.
The Paradox Twins, dude. Which is an excellent... Is that the first tag duel?
It might be. It's in Duelist Kingdom, right? So yeah, I think it is, because they have their big fucking labyrinth that also makes no goddamn sense.
They have a big duelist labyrinth, and one of them can only lie, and one can only tell the truth, and one of the doors behind them is like the way out of this cave, and one of them is like a trap, and it's the Para and Dox Paradox Twins versus Yugi and Joey, which I think is really fun. And I also, as I've said, I really love the Merrick Joey duel in the semifinals of Battle City. That one just always kind of stands out as having like really excellent character moments for Joey and being a really intense duel. You can see a bunch of awesome shit go down. I like that they're dueling on a funny blimp. It's very epic, very extravagant. So that's probably a personal favorite for me. I'm thinking if there's anything else I want to mention. Because we covered that so much.
I think that, like, as far as those arcs, like, I'm good. Like, these are my favorite things. Least favorite thing about Yu-Gi-Oh! Up until this point. What you got?
Ooh, least favorite thing. Okay.
Mine is only that Kaiba has no consequences, minus PTSD, for literally beating a man half to death.
Yeah. Let's see. Least favorite? My joke answer is how confusing the Moku, or how confusing the Bakura Merrick shit gets, which I'm not a fan of. What is it? As wild as a spoiler is, I don't actually like the I'm going to kill myself if I lose this duel thing that much.
But it makes so much sense for Kaiba's character at the time.
I know. It is cool. I go back and forth on that being like a favorite or least favorite moment of it. I think it's pretty stupid how literally in like episode 3, they're like, all right. And then Weevil just fucking throws Exodia into the goddamn ocean. which is a pretty stupid way to get rid of Exodia, but it'd be like that, I guess. You had to write him out somehow.
Or you could never have written him in. You could never.
That is true. And Joey Wheeler jumps off a cruise ship to go swim for the fucking pieces of Exodia in a choppy ocean and doesn't die. Man, least favorite. I wish we got more Pegasus. I wanted Pegasus to be a recurring character to the degree of some of these other recurring characters.
Yeah, because the only times you see Pegasus are either like little one-shot moments and like a movie.
Yeah, which is fine. We get a lot of excellent Pegasus in the time we spend with him. I wish we got more just because, well, I don't know what else they could have gotten out of him. The people writing and voice acting Pegasus are having such a damn good time with it. He's my favorite antagonist in the series. And I wish we got more, even though I know we did get enough. I'm just a greedy son of a bitch.
Yeah, that's completely fair. All right. So positive thoughts to end the show.
Yeah. First of all, thank you to everyone who worked in the entire creation of Yu-Gi-Oh! Whether it be the card game or the television series, even the 4Kids dub, I don't care. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is really damn great, and I'm glad it exists because it's given me a lot of excellent memories. Two, thank you to everyone who listened through us just describe the wild shit that happens in Yu-Gi-Oh! And talk about our favorite and least favorite parts of it. Three, nothing in this part of Yu-Gi-Oh! Made me cry. But that will change in the future of Yu-Gi-Oh! So thank you for anyone who continues to stick around to the future. And right now, times are continuing to stay very tough. I think that's pretty obvious no matter who you are, whether it be political things or the climate or still dealing with the COVIDs or you're getting into midterm season, whatever, you know, it's almost October, right? Things are tough. And this is going to sound really cheesy, but it's important to know who you can rely on and to remember that you can rely on those people. And that you matter, and that the people who care about you really care about you. And this is speaking back to like the power of friendship bullshit in Yu-Gi-Oh! That comes through as a really important theme. But never forget that as crazy as all this shit in life is getting, you're never alone because you can always come re-listen to this fucking podcast episode. No, in all seriousness though, stick together. Keep your head up. We'll be here next weekend. I can't thank you enough for spending this time with us. I'm really excited to do part two of this, which we'll have up whenever we can. Hopefully two Saturdays. Hopefully one Saturday from now. Two Saturdays from this recording. And yeah, have a good morning.
I just want to thank everyone for watching. Thank you for dealing with all of the weird technical issues, which I'm pretty sure this is the last episode in the technical issues arc. I'm pretty sure we have everything figured out now, which is to say moving to a new recording environment is tough.
Don't even get me started about how we figured out how to download the audios so they don't get eaten by the website. That shit, character development.
All of that to say, thanks for watching. Thanks for sticking with it. And remember that your friendship is only as valuable as your card game playing skills. So go buy some cards. Go buy some booster packs, losers. Thanks for listening, guys.